All right, start the show.
You guys want to start the show?
Let's start the show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Morning Cereal. Not just any Saturday Morning Cereal. Welcome to the Frankenberry Special 2023. That's right. It's the spooky season, and we're all spooky here. By all, I'm looking at a skeleton crew tonight. It's just me, myself, the most important element. Don't worry. The meat's in the stew. Dan Grimshay, I'm your host. And at least I do have backing me up this week. Mr. Marquis, won't you speak up?
Hello, my monster friends.
There he is, Spooky Marquis on target. And of course, our good friends, Johnny Heck and Jimmy the Gent, unable to join us.
But they are here in spirit.
In spirit.
Welcome to the Frank and Betty season show.
So anyway... we've got perhaps the most perfect Frankenberry subject.
So excited.
This year.
Yeah.
It is a graphic novel. A
graphic novel. We're going to be talking all about a graphic novel.
We're going to be discussing a graphic novel. And written by one Mark Russell, who you will hear from later.
Yeah.
Also drawn by one Peter Snyber, who you will also hear later. Jimmy and I had a great conversation with him, and you're not getting out of it, so stay tuned for that. But first, let me tell you a little bit about what it is and why this just seems like a Halloween miracle fell in our laps.
Yes.
This is Cerealites. You'll know us. We're all about, you know, those themes of Saturday morning cereal, which we grew up with. And if you look around, you'll notice they've grown up with us. Boom. Tagline achieved.
Mm-hmm. Trademarked.
And what we've got here is a graphic novel called, get this, I'm not making this up, Cereal.
It's called Cereal.
It's called Cereal.
Amazing.
It is not about cereal per se. There's cereal in it.
Uh-huh.
It's more about monsters. Cereal monsters, you ask?
Oh,
well, yes.
Frankenberry season show.
There is, though there is no Frankenberry, there is a Frankenberry.
Uh-huh.
There is
a Beau.
A Marquis de Coco.
A Marquis de Coco.
There's a Beauberry.
A Beauberry. There is a Leprechaun King.
There's a Leprechaun King.
Uh-huh. There is a Honeycomb Realm.
No,
there's
a Honeycomb Fortress.
A Honeycomb Fortress.
There is, this thing is packed with illusions.
To your Saturday mornings, literally
to
Saturday
all morning. Saturday morning. American, at least, I should qualify.
There's a Antonio Tiger.
Yes, Count Antonio, I think
Count
his name
Antonio.
Is. I don't even want to get pulled too deep into the rabbit hole of, I want to say some of these cameos, you're going to have to go get the book, which, by the way, is available now.
It's available now.
Wherever you can get it, digitally, perhaps physically. I can't tell you exactly.
And actually, I just got word from the publisher. We're actually going to be giving a couple of copies away.
No, yes. It is a Halloween miracle.
It's a Frankenberry season miracle. It's amazing. This is... the artwork is fantastic. This is the worst medium, probably, to be talking about graphic novels. But, I mean, let me just say that the art... The illustrations, the panels, the action. It's a wonderful, fantastic graphic novel. It's like, give me my wildest dream.
Yeah.
And this is it. It's crazy how much.
But is it about a bunch of, cereal monster mascots going around? talking to kids about the dangers of drugs or something. No. No, no it isn't.
No.
This takes itself perfectly seriously enough.
It is a medieval...
Still hilarious.
...fantasy.
Yes. It's like a sword and sorcerer style, pulpy... when I was growing up, I didn't read a lot of comic books, but I read the hell out of some Conan the Barbarian in the 80s.
Very Conan.
Love that series. And it's all about, you know, medieval times. There's swords, sorcery, if you will, to keep going back to it. Robert E. Howard up the yin yang. If you are familiar with The Watchmen, it's a lot like the Black Freighter comic within a comic.
Okay.
It is dripping with tragedy and violence and betrayal.
And purpose.
And twists and turns.
Yes.
And it is all about, and I love when properties do this, it's about characters you already know, and it shows them in a totally different light.
Yeah.
You know, I remember 20 years ago reading the at the time was just a novel called Wicked. About the Wicked Witch from Wizard of Oz.
I've seen the musical.
And I was going to say, I was like, oh, this can become a thing. And it immediately just became a musical.
And it's a fantastic musical. Like, it's, Tony winning.
Yeah, fair enough. Obviously. But then it stalled the genre of reinventing beloved characters correctly until we finally get Serial out now, wherever you can buy comic books.
Or win it by listening to this episode. Yeah.
But nothing exemplifies the idea of these themes growing up with us, then making a very adult version, you know, it's, and I feel like this, this, I'll call it a gimmick, but I love it. This gimmick is, it's having its moment. You got your Five Nights at Freddy's, but the haunted Chuck E. Cheese
the
dolls.
The Chuck E. Cheese, came the animatronics.
From a video game, in fact, where, it's, you know, that use the beloved things of your youth to scare you.
Yeah.
This is, I think, more thoughtful. I think there's more artistry behind it. There's certainly some great storytelling.
I think props to Mark Russell. I think it also captures that kind of rare magic that we just don't have now, where you don't get to sit at a breakfast table and look at the back of a box anymore. Look at the art on the box of cereal, because now you're looking at your phone.
Well, now you're so always set in. Aside at least a quick perusal of any cereal box, but maybe that was because that's how I was raised.
Yeah, that's how we were raised. But you know, like little did we know of the motifs, the archetypes that they were projecting with these cereal characters.
Yeah,
and pretty much all of them have its archetype and its motif. They were unexplored, like, deeply.
Yeah.
And I think that this graphic novel actually has the opportunity to do that. And what I loved about it is that, yes, there's a lot of inside jokes. I chuckled a lot reading it.
Oh, yeah. There's like some amazing, hilarious throwaway things in there.
It's hilarious. But it's
not just the monster mascots get cameos, by the way. Yeah. You have to really comb through to see everybody who makes an appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all twisted, you know, into this, like I said, like a medieval tale of torture and madness and tragedy. And, you know, and it explores the idea of what it is to be a monster, you know, it touchingly, but also hilariously.
Yeah.
Pulls it off.
Well, and just as a little sample, the gravedigger is a frog.
Yes.
And what does he do?
Well, whenever they have a body, they tell them how many to dig them.
It's hilarious. I mean, that is so good. And I'm just, you know, and of course, you guys, it's about Honey Smacks and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, it's, I loved it. Every single page turn, you just can't wait to hear where the story goes. You're totally enthralled by the panels themselves and of the artwork. It's fantastic, you guys. And it was such a pleasure to read. As soon as I heard about this project, I reached out to the publishers and I was like, hey, we got to have these guys on. We do this yearly. We do our Frankenberry season show every year. It's our serialized version of a Halloween special. It's the only time that we ever really talk about horror movies, horror tropes, and cereal.
You know?
And this is it. And all of a sudden, these things just kind of met perfectly in a graphic novel. And it's just, it is really something else. So, man, I mean, should we bring this interview?
You guys want to hear?
Yeah.
Let's cut right to it. Here is myself, Jimmy the Gent, having a conversation all about the graphic novel Serial with its creators, writer Mark Russell, and artist Peter Snyber. Hey, magic interview machine, take us to the haunted interview.
Meanwhile,
have you guys ever, I don't imagine you've probably been in the same room, but have you actually worked?
No, I'm not sure we have. I don't think, not then it would have to be in the old days sometime.
I don't go back to the old days.
Not that old.
Well, I'm that old. I just haven't been in. I started in comics in 2015. So.
Oh, okay. No, then we absolutely not have. Then we haven't met. Nope, absolutely not. Not physically.
Well, and yet you have birthed this together.
Yeah. Real technology. Brief introduction here. My name's Jimmy. This is my co-host Dan, or I'm his co-host, and. Nice to meet you guys. Thanks for taking the time today, Peter. I know this is a little later for you, so thanks so much. And go ahead, Dan. I know you wanted to start.
Well, first of all, thank you. Welcome, gentlemen. Great having you. I got to read the book myself yesterday. I absolutely loved it, but I'm a real sucker for almost everything that's in here. I love reimagined, established characters. One of the only comics I read growing up was Conan the Barbarian. I had about 50 issues that I would just reread from the mid 80s, and I was just getting such great vibes of that kind of Robert Howard, you know, grand world tragic king sort of storytelling. And also, we here on the show every Halloween, we do like a love letter episode to those monster serials. So, I mean, kismet upon kismet. So,
right. No, it sounds like it was meant to be.
Yeah. You guys were speaking to me very loudly through that. And I absolutely loved it.
Great. Glad to hear it.
And
well, I liked it too. And
too late, Jimmy. No one's buying it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I was just getting ready to say that Peter's artwork kind of reminded me of early Vampirella work, like the Warren comics, Eerie, and that kind of stuff, right?
That's a lot of where I come from, obviously.
Yeah. Well done, both of you guys. Great job. I really enjoyed the story. But tell me, Mark, where does this come from? How many are you sitting as a child staring at your cereal box?
Yeah, well, probably. Everybody's I don't know story. That I was thinking, well, this is going to be a comic book someday. But it actually, weirdly, I was writing these before I even had a career in comics. Like, I was just posting what I thought were sort of funny little stories or anecdotes about Count Chocula on Facebook. And, you know, or like, you know, about him and Frankenberry. And Booberry, as if they lived in some sort of Game of Thrones is very popular at the time. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be funny if to write like an episode of Game of Thrones, but it was starring the characters of the cereal boxes. And so I was writing that on Facebook. And ironically, that's what got me noticed by DC Comics. That's what got me noticed by Marie Javens, who tagged me to write a series called Prez, which was the first comic book I ever wrote for DC or for anyone. So in a lot of ways, these serial fiction stories are how I got into comic books. So it's only fitting that now we've gone full circle and they are being turned into a comic book.
Was it any kind of a legal battle to use these characters? I mean, I know you don't use their names, but it kind of would fall apart if you were using their real names.
Yeah, I think we're
the back.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we had to be a little cute with the intellectual property. We had to change the names and the likenesses. But I think we haven't really had any problems. One, because I think it's pretty clearly parody. And two, also, I think they probably just figure Ahoy's not worth suing. Nothing against not Ahoy.
Not yet.
If this was like DC or Marvel, they might be a little more, you know, they might have a conversation with their lawyers about what they could get out of suing. But I think that we're small enough time that they're probably not going to pay much attention to it.
Hmm.
Well, then we'll try not to advertise too loudly. Then.
Oh, yeah. No, we don't want anyone to know about this book. Please. Don't.
You're in the right place then, Mark.
Mark, were you just recently at New York Comic Con?
I was there.
How was it? Were you promoting this book or specifically?
Yeah, I have my comps of this book, and it just came out in stores, I think, that week. So I brought about 10 to 20 copies with me to New York, and they all sold out like quickly. People were really excited by it, I think. At least those people were.
And it's
very cool.
And Peter, I read your little blurb at the end of it. And I imagine it was you thought it was going to be like a promotional dental hygiene type of project. And I love, you said, yeah, I had breakfast cereal a couple times as a kid. Cornflakes, they were soggy.
It wasn't a huge when you work with what I work with, you sort of get to keep up with all the Americana. So I had an idea what this was, but I must admit, it was one of those things when I was diving into it. It was really, I didn't know that world existed at all. It was really like, oh, wow.
Well, since you've done it, have you gone out to pick up some super processed triple sugar colorful cereal?
I think I've gotten too old for that. I'm sorry. I'm with my oatmeal. That's my thing.
Fair enough.
Well, yeah, oatmeal took some shots in this story too.
Yeah, he was a great character to do.
Yeah. So yeah, then once you got the script, did you have to, research what the trademarked, mascots look like? And then
yeah, we did it. We had to come up with some alternative designs, obviously. So I had to do a little bit of, but actually I knew the basic characters. I mean, they're always in the background somewhere. So I'd seen them before. So it's pretty accessible stuff. So it was fun to get to play with some of them. There were some, when you start really looking hard at those characters, there's some really fun design stuff that was kind of interesting to get into.
Yeah. Aside from their color, they looked, different enough. One's obviously a vampire. One's obviously Frankenstein's monster, et cetera. But my favorite has got to be your interpretation of the Beauberry ghost.
That's probably absolutely the most horrific of the characters. Yeah.
Was the design process, the character design left solely up to you, or did Mark have, did the script lay out some basic looks that he wanted?
I followed obviously what was in the script, but apart from that, I think we even went back, if you go back and look at the first issue, the first installment that was in Post Snift of Terror, I think I actually went back and redid some designs because in the beginning I wasn't, it took me a while to completely grasp the tone of the book, so I had to go back and do a little re-editing when we were putting together the trade paperback. But I think I think it was a pretty smooth process. I just went with what was in the script and what I could find in terms of the actual things that we were parodying, and then just went from there. And then I put on top of that, of course, the classical. The source of inspiration was like the Gene Colan horror stories from the 70s. Is one of the things that was really that I thought it feels weird comparing yourself to or mentioning yourself in the same sentence as Gene Colan. So because I just feel that I'm just pulling myself into the spotlight to show how much less of an artist I am than him. But he was an inspiration.
It certainly shows. Yeah, it really shows through in the work, in this specific work. Yeah. How did you kids get together? You're literally half a world away from each other. How did you combine and meet up?
Well, luckily, Tom Pyre was our editor at Ahoy, and he knows everybody in comics. He goes back to Vertigo in the 90s. And so luckily his Rolodex of artists is much deeper than mine. And he's really the one that put all the talent together. But it was a masterstroke on his part, because when he showed me Peter's art, I just thought, well, this is like the perfect look. And Peter had worked with Ahoy before. What was the title you did for them, Peter?
Did I work from them before? I don't think I did, actually.
Oh, maybe no, you didn't. But Tom had some artwork of yours, which he showed me, and I thought, this is just the perfect tone for what I'm going for. It's gothic, but also it's not too dark.
I'm trying to remember if I actually did anything, but I don't think I did. I would have remembered.
Mark, the writing, the attention to detail. I'm a sucker for that sort of thing. But maybe my favorite little throwaway thing is the Coco Channel. It's like, well, yeah. That's not even related to serial or monsters, no, but it just grabs me.
I have a hard time passing on a pun, though. If there's a pun, I think, this works, even if it's not really germane. It's like it will usually make its way into the script, and I just, you know, I just assume 99.9% of people reading it are going to miss it. So, hats off to you, one of the few that got the background joke. But yeah, that's one of the things I like to do when I'm working in a sort of a world like this, sort of a pre-created world, is to like take it as seriously as possible and try to think about what is it about, or what are all the little details about the breakfast cereals? How many of them can I work into this story? Like little like catchphrases, you know, like little things like all part of a balanced breakfast, or, you know, 13 minerals and vitamins, these little things they would say in the commercials. How many of those can I work into the story? How many of the characters that were appeared on cereal boxes can I work into the story? Or breakfast references. So that really became my sort of guidepost when it became clear that this is not just going to be a solo shot, but it was going to be a continuing serial story, serial in both senses of the term.
Did you miss anybody, or is anybody you couldn't use?
The one I sort of kick myself over, it's like, this is so obvious. How could you have left them out? Is Yummy Mummy.
I admit I kind of was expecting him to show up. I don't think we were missing anything by the end. And for some reason, I was waiting for you to, and I hope that if we get into spoilers here, just tell me to shut up. But I was waiting for Snap, Crackle, and Pop to sort of spring from the one Crackle. And I was like, I don't know how he's going to do that. And then you didn't, but I'm not disappointed.
Good.
But yeah, the Honey Smacks Grave Digger, genius move there.
Dig them.
Yeah.
Two graves.
Catchphrase.
Yeah, I'm feeling like my favorite bit, which I think speaks to both of you guys, was when they were asking what Count Chocula, or the Count, what it tastes like, what his victims taste like, and he was just he was just all racked with pain. It's chocolate. It tastes like chocolate. Like that was probably my favorite.
Yeah, a lot of it, you know, is kind of like started with the idea. I was thinking to myself, like, how dumb is it to have a breakfast cereal mascot be a vampire? Because vampires can't have breakfast. You know, they got to be in the crypt asleep during, you know, daytime. So why would you choose a vampire? And I thought, well, this would be like the most cruel thing you could do to a vampire, to make them like sit and pretend to enjoy a bowl of cereal while they're slowly disintegrating in the morning sun. And that kind of really kicked off the story. And it's like, well, this is the story. It's about a vampire who has to pretend not to be a vampire.
Was that the, I think you mentioned something of a one shot that spilled into a graphic comic. Was that the first story, the one shot where he was sitting at the table, right?
Yeah, the first one is a little disjointed. The continuity is not really the same as the following chapters, which I assume readers will forgive. But the reason for that is because it was written to be sort of a complete story, a one shot, and it wasn't written with the other, you know, seven chapters in mind.
Mm-hmm. Only
that's also why I think the character designs changed a bit, because the tone also shifted a little bit after the first issue. So, but it went a bit darker And then it went a bit darker still.
And I feel like that's kind of, you know, it's not unlike, you know, if you watch the first episode of The Simpsons or something, it's very different than, you know, what you would see by the second or third season. So I sort of write it off like it's okay that it's a little different than what followed because it was written so much earlier and it was written, in, you know, under a different mindset.
And you got to start in first gear. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
The heavy lifting is there. And I admit, I'm a little confused, and it's probably holes in my knowledge base, but the Duke L'Orange, is he representative of that one weird glass of orange juice they always show in The Complete Breakfast?
No.
Or is there an orange cereal I'm missing?
There's not an orange cereal. He was supposed to, the thing that he represents is sort of the intrusion of the non-breakfast world into that. He doesn't belong because Duke L'Orange is something you eat for dinner. It's not something you eat for breakfast. So he's sort of there as an intruder. And he doesn't really belong in the world of breakfast. And that's kind of, and you know, there's also other characters like that who are sort of peripheral because they aren't breakfast oriented, like Croque Madame, who has like
another great
egg hat. These are foods that are sort of invaders to the world of breakfast.
And of course, brunch is for, what was it? Whores.
Wastrels. Whores and wastrels.
That's so good, man. That's so good. And, when we read that when I read the preview copy, I can't imagine you've ever heard an episode of our podcast, but, you know, breakfast cereal is our stock and trade. And every conversation eventually comes back to that. And we do once a year, we have the cereal monsters. We do parodies of different movies. We do like we have those characters are like say in Godfather or True Romance or just myriads. Every year we do that. So to read this book, it was like he was saying it's kismet or whatever. So like mine, so well done, guys. Really enjoyed it so much.
Great,
thank you.
And miles beyond anything we've ever pulled off.
Right, I was just telling Dan while we were warming up, man. This is, I'm a little bit angry that we didn't think of some of this stuff. Like it's so good, it's so good, it's so rich, like the chocolatey blood.
Yes,
thank you.
That's all part of this balanced breakfast.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess we got to ask if there's going to be follow-ups or if you're taking this kind of idea, you're going to take some other mascots from childhood and grow them up for us, because we talk about the themes of our childhood growing up and getting dark all the time on the show.
I hadn't thought of it, but, you know, if there was like a chance for a, you know, an anniversary edition or something like that, that would be probably the perfect opportunity to bring a Yummy Mummy into the fold.
Yeah.
But you remembered Fruit Brute, and a lot of people don't. So you still get credit for that one.
I barely remembered Fruit Brute from my childhood. I think he kind of was a little before my time, but he seemed like he had to be in the book.
Maybe if we go further, Yummy Mummy is sort of like the Crypt Keeper and introduces the anthology stories as you go on monthly.
Maybe General Post comes back as Yummy Mummy.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, was somebody to come back.
Yes. Yeah. I like that. And again, to talk the legalities of it, Post, General Mills, you know, they're not Disney or anything, but they are really big companies.
Yeah, I never know how these corporate entities are going to react to something like this. Usually, thankfully, they just sort of ignore it because it's not what they do, and it's not enough of a not worth their time. But yeah, I think it's always better to just sort of do what you're going to do anyway. And then not worry about the fallout when it comes, but don't talk yourself out of something. Don't talk yourself out of a good idea.
Sure.
Ask forgiveness.
I mean, these days, at the very least, it could exist on the internet in some form, right?
I think if they, if they were smart, they would try to co-opt this. They would offer us like some sort of licensing agreement to turn this into an animated series.
If they were smart, right? Yeah. I would like that.
They're too stuffed with sugar. They don't know what they're doing. Go ahead, Post. Come after me.
Well, they own this really valuable IP, but I don't think they're really doing anything with it.
Yeah. And like I said, we tend to go and, common use rated ourselves quite a bit, not to the effect that you guys were able to pull off.
Mm-hmm. Or to the effect or success that you guys have.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I had a long time to write these because there was a long gap between the first one and the second. So it helped to like have some time to sort of ruminate on what a story could be involving these characters.
Right. Like I said, I don't want to get into spoiler territory just because there are some twists and turns. So I'm going to save those questions, but honestly, all the rest of my notes was just a bunch of, oh my God, look at that gag. Oh, look at this.
Right.
Well, I even wrote, tis not small. One of my favorite little bits in there. And I remember jokes about that commercial more than I remember the commercial itself. So that's how you know it's really made it into pop culture.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, while you were
I think a lot of it was that these even if you don't eat the breakfast cereals, even if you aren't familiar with the everyone kind of knows these characters, which is kind of what the story is about. These characters having a life that goes beyond any actual material based on them. Because there's almost nothing really based on these characters other than these really short cartoon serial ads. So it's kind of, to me, it just seemed like an interesting challenge to create these sort of backstories for them.
It's kind of fun because they are just a tablet that you can do that with. You don't have to ignore what's already established.
They're so little established that you can
fairly blank slate. Yeah.
Well, now that sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say now that Mattel is even Mattel are making their cinematic universe. Maybe Mark is going to get the call tomorrow when they see this.
Yeah, we'll have the General Mills cinematic universe. That's how we're living in a simulation. It's like
right. Well, I did buy some a Boo Berry action figure at San Diego Comic Con this past year.
Does he look like Chris Helmsworth? Like Boo Berry?
No, he looked like he was straight off the cereal box. Yeah. But definitely some of your guys' ideas would sell some plastic.
Yeah, I think ripped blueberries probably our big toy idea at the moment.
Yeah, for Chris Hemsworth. Mm. Was there? I was going to ask Peter. Was there any point where you sent some of your sketches or anything where you're looking at? I don't think they're called dailies or whatever. But did Mark ever say, "Hey, pull back here a little bit," or maybe go push you a little farther in any of the designs or?
No, I think there was in the beginning, there were a couple of things about the designs, small things. And I also, I think I miscolored one of the characters in one issue.
Yeah, that was like the big thing I remember. I mean, I thought Peter's designs were great, but the one thing I sort of put my foot down on was that initially Frankenberry was colored blue. And I was like, have you never seen Frankenberry? He's got to be pink.
I think it must have been I don't know. But it was just fun because it was like he was complaining about the colorist, and I was like, but I am the colorist.
Yeah, I know the guy. I'll talk to him. Yeah.
That guy's always falling down on the job.
Well, the finished product was great because you could always tell who the narrator was by that color palette in the background.
Yeah. It really helps that they're all sort of color coded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And let's see, I had a kind of running list in my head, like who is here and who is not. And you guys were thinking of far more mascots than I could remember, like the Honey Smacks Bee. Like there was a couple others who just had sort of the one-off in the background shots.
Yeah, there are a lot of background characters, like, the Raisin Brand son shows up at one point, like overhead.
Yeah. Yeah, I was telling, that was a good throw off. Just like a one-off joke, right? Like he was just trying to get the vampire.
And the Cookie Wizard, beautiful Merlin Jarvis. Choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Appella
Jax.
Oh yeah, that was good. That was a good touch. I think that was Peter's
idea. Yeah, I think I did that when I was doing the lettering. I was like, that's so obvious.
That took me like two or three reads before suddenly I was like, oh, it's right there.
Yeah, that was totally Peter.
So great, all those little touches, absolutely wonderful. And I'm sure there's some that went over my head, so I'm going to have to go back and reread.
There's actually a couple of them in some of the background scenes, because there's some of the breakfast scenes and stuff, but there's so many characters I had to come up with some. So there's a few that refer to some coffee brands and stuff like that I just figured that nobody would know in the US, right. But it was like, we need somebody here. And some of them were like, hypothetically, this character could be representing, you know, cinnamon or something like that. So there's a couple of characters like that I'll put in there.
And was that at the one table scene? Was that Aunt Jemima sitting at the table with them? There was somebody that was my best guess. It was a darker skinned lady with a thing on her head.
Oh, right. No, that was actually a reference to a Danish coffee brand an African lady on the package. I mean, that was my take on it anyway.
Mm-hmm. More detail than I can even find in there. I absolutely love it. And the general tone. I'm such a sucker for that. Just like, you know, like the comic within a comic and Watchmen, just dripping with dread, and the old like carriage, right. You're going by horse through dark woods. All
it does have a very Black Freighter sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
It's even more ridiculous that it's about breakfast cereal characters.
But the great thing is that a thing like this only works if you do it completely straight faced. You can have all the little background jokes and all this, but you can't betray that it's funny. The characters have to keep completely straight faces throughout for it to work.
I think that's the key to writing a funny comic in general, is that the characters don't realize they're in a funny comic. So
yeah, yeah.
To them, this is the universe, and these stakes are high and real.
Well, yes, I like the
as you cast Leslie Nielsen in your comic, I think you're kind of done.
Well, the scene when Quaker Oats man shows up, and I won't get into much detail, but he is very much taking his advocate role very seriously. And then you kind of see the village people speaking in the background start to lose their patience. Like, why are we listening to this garbage?
I love those village people. They were so fun to do. Shut up and burn him already.
Yeah. Oh, so anyway, amazingly well done. And I feel like the more we talk about it, the more I'm just going to gush. So I don't know if there's any areas that we haven't touched on that you guys want to get out there for listeners, or
just that it's in stores now. So if you are interested in reading the book we are talking about, please, you know, consult your local comic shop, or if you don't have a comic shop, maybe a Barnes & Noble or a bookstore where that carries graphic novels.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No, and maybe we haven't officially said what it's called. We've said it several times, but it is called Serial. So if you're going to the comic shop and you're just say, we're looking for the comic about Serial, that'll probably be enough.
Yeah.
Serial, C-E-R-E-A-L. Originally, I wanted to call it Serial Monsters, S-E-R-I-A-L, but Tom talked me out of it. So we just went with Serial, C-E-R-E.
Yeah, right. Write that down, Dan. That's available.
They left that one on the branch. Good.
So, fellas, like I said, we always bring this conversation back around to cereal. And I started off by pointing out when I was a little boy, I used to have to get up super early in the morning to beat my brother to the couch to get the good spot in front of the TV. But before that, I'd have to run into the kitchen and beat my parents in there so I could pour myself a big bowl of sugary goodness to get me through the morning. So, Mark, Peter, we'd like to know, what's your favorite bowl of Saturday morning cereal, and what cartoons did you watch?
Well, when I was a kid, I really loved Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I think that was probably my favorite cereal. And my cartoon of choice, the one that like I would let my brother or sister choose any other time slot except for this one, I had to watch Super Friends.
Yeah.
And I was a poor, and I was a poor, deprived European kid. We didn't have morning Saturday morning cartoons, if you can believe that.
That's, oh, see, I was afraid this one wasn't going to work for Peter.
Trying to wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, over here, parents would just lock the kids out of the house on Saturday mornings. You know, go outside and don't come in until it's noon.
Okay. Did you
then
have
you'll
cereal?
Get soggy oatmeal.
Well, that's a tragedy. Now, well, what about now? Do you get to watch any cartoons you enjoy now that you can do whatever you wanted as an adult?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, now you have more cartoons that you can throw a stick at. You have Netflix. You have the. There's even a, I think there's even a specialized Danish cartoon channel now with homemade cartoon, not homemade, but Danish made cartoons that they're trying to start up. There's so much, but actually, I'm working all the time. I don't get to do much except work.
Too much time drawing cartoon figures to sit and watch cartoons.
Yeah,
that's a tragedy.
Keep up the good work, right?
Yeah.
So, guys, anything you want to plug before we let you go? Anything else you're working on?
Nothing I can mention right now.
Okay. We'll get back to you.
Because of the strike or just it's not time yet?
No, there may be some big news in the new year, but we'll wait and see.
Fair enough.
I will say that I'm currently working on two comics that are in Stan's Rumpus Room, which is about a billionaire who locks people in his basement and then has them crushed and turned into skin cream. And also Traveling to Mars, which is about the first manned mission to Mars. And the person they send, they chose him because he's terminally ill, so they don't have to bring him back. But it's not as much of a downer as it sounds. So if you're interested in more
lighthearted,
but the
rock.
First one is
yeah. Check out Traveling to Mars or Rumpus Room.
Excellent. Well, will do.
Well, we got to get you watching some more comedies or something, Mark.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. And again, just thank you for the work. I absolutely love that comic book graphic
thank
novel.
You for reading
apologies,
it.
But wow, that spoke to me like very few things do.
Great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Really
thank
enjoyed you. It, guys. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
And thank you for helping spread the word.
Yes.
Oh, of course. And when the new year comes and you can talk about it, we'd love to spread more words.
Yeah.
Thank
Look
you,
forward
Peter.
To the next time, guys.
Thank you, Mark Russell.
Yes,
bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
It is.
Don't open that box. Don't open that box. Marshmallow ghosts are leaving our cereal. Good. Now there's room for more chocolatey marshmallows.
You mean room for more strawberry-flavored marshmallows.
A delicious part of this complete breakfast. Shall we?
Let's
go. Chocolate.
And Frankenberry.
Coming your way. I've got a monster request today.
Aha.
Hey, Frankenberry season.
It's Frankenberry season, y'all. It's the one time a year where we talk about horror movies.
That's right. And we're going to talk about some horror movies. We're transitioning so seamlessly.
Yes.
From
graphic novels,
satire,
cereal.
Tribute, parody, graphic novels, right to horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
You guys probably didn't even see it, but
that's right.
Here it is.
Exactly.
Horror movies on Halloween. Mm-hmm. We've watched our fair share of them for the show over
yes,
the years.
Over the years.
But there was, to me, there was that magic time when, and this is probably just our age group. Yes. So if you don't agree, I understand, listener. But if you are my age, 30, 46, you, and you don't agree, well, then you're wrong.
Yeah.
So I just want to put some qualifiers there,
yeah.
But the golden age of horror movies, even though there are much better, more intelligent,
at
more
least,
horrifying movies out there now, nothing touches my horror heart like a good 80s slasher.
At least horror movie characters.
Oh, well,
maybe
yeah,
not the movie itself, like what qualifies as the scariest or the goriest or whatever
yeah.
hat you want
or
to put on.
Or even good
it.
Or barely watchable, some of them
yeah.
going back. But Freddy, Michael, Jason.
The Hellraiser guy, Pinhead.
Yeah, Pinhead.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep listing. We've got enough.
But I think that would be our Mount Rushmore, right? It would be Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, and Pinhead.
Yeah, well, even Pinhead seems like an alternate to me. Hey, sure, he's big. But no, the three on,
but he had,
on
like,
the mountain.
There was like five Hellraisers.
Hey,
right?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were 26 fucking...
There was Friday the 13th.
And Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And...
yeah. Yeah.
Did they get to Nightmare on Elm Street 4, I believe?
No, there's like 9 or 10. Oh. But, plus all the reboots now. But I mean, if
I wasn't including the original
Robert Englund, yeah. I mean, I think it was like, I know the original Jason, I know they changed actors who wore the hockey mask or whatever. Yeah. But
even in the first one.
I think the original Jason, character-wise, like, you know, the canon, the continuity. I think I remember Jason X, so that's the 10th movie. So that got up there.
That I do remember that. That was that the one when he went to space, or was there one just called Jason Goes to Space?
That one might have been the space one.
There's a spooky jet overhead.
Space jet.
Jason in space jet.
Okay, it's almost done.
But the Jason Goes to Space, and I think everyone laughed at that.
Yeah, and it was, but also, like, it's also kind of smart. It's like Jason in a submarine, right? Like, you know, put Jason in a small, you know, room where you can't get out of. It's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, well, Jason in space is actually in the infinite, though.
I think it was like Friday the 13th, like 2000 or something. It was like a futuristic thing. I'm trying to remember. Sorry.
Could have been. And Jason X, or only that was like the New York one. I am trying to remember.
Okay, because there you go. All right,
starts the whole series starts on a small
Camp Crystal Lake,
a small summer camp in the middle of nowhere.
And it's actually not Jason in the first one, remember. It's his mother.
Spoiler alert for anybody hasn't bothered in the last 41 years to watch that movie.
There's not even a hockey mask until the third movie.
Until the third one?
Yeah, because Jason shows up at the end of the first movie. He kind of jumps out of the lake, so he's like alive. Okay. Yeah. And then Jason is the killer in the second movie, but he's just wearing like a pillow case over his head with the holes knocked out.
That's scary enough.
Yeah, yeah. So the actual...
Is that not Texas Chainsaw Massacre that has the bag?
No, that's Leatherface. He's got a mask made of people's skin.
Leatherface, I would, by the way, I would put as an alternate above Pinhead even.
Sure. Yeah, I guess. Sure.
Out of respect. Okay. I mean, you don't just start throwing on presidents from the 20th century.
Yeah, but he's more of a character from the 70s.
Progenitor. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, yes. Yeah,
yeah.
Sorry.
But yeah, so Jason, the iconic hockey mask doesn't even show up until the third movie. And the original, I think, came out in 80, right? So the second one, I don't know, 82, 83. The third one, 83, 84, around then. The hockey mask, my favorite horror character when I was a kid was Jason. So I watched all of those when I was a kid. Even though if you guys have been listening to this show a while, you guys know I don't like horror movies. But when I was a kid, I did like Friday the 13th. And I watched all the Nightmare on Elm Streets too. Yeah.
Just pop quiz, asshole. How did Freddy Krueger end up in the predicament he was in? What was his backstory?
Oh, he was a child murderer, and the victim's parents, who lived on Elm Street, they all found him and burned him alive in his house, and he burned to death, which is why he's all burnt up. But he was so evil that he could live on in the nightmare realm. Oh, and if you want to even go further back, which I think was
revealed, I didn't even want to go that far back, but I love it. Keep going.
In like the third or fourth movie, it was determined that his mother was a nurse, like in a psychiatric ward, like in an Arkham Asylum type, where you put like criminals or murderers in.
Yeah.
And she ended up getting locked in the prison. In this place, and then she was raped by all of these inmates. And so Freddy Krueger, as the mythos goes, is the bastard child of 1,000 murderers. Even though it could only be one egg, I mean, come on, technically, but you know, you gotta just Let's just say he's the bastard son of a thousand murderers or whatever.
All right.
Yeah. So he's
distasteful
so
as this is, I could also see multiple sperm.
Yes.
It does happen, fraternal twin style.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say he even gets up to triplets brewing, but Freddie absorbs the other two. Yeah, so I would say at most, in a crazy world,
it's
the bastard child of three murderer fathers.
Yeah. But yeah, that is the backstory of Freddie. Jason, on the other hand, his backstory is that he was a kid that was at the camp, at the summer camp at Camp Crystal Lake,
yep.
And the chaperones, who are all teenagers, they were fucking each other, losing their virginities.
Yeah, doing drugs and sinning.
Yes, and sinning.
Yeah, setting that 80s horror movie template.
Exactly.
Scream.
And so they weren't watching, and Jason drowned in the lake. And that's why the mom is the murderer in the first movie, because she's out for vengeance for her
son.
She's
out for vengeance.
Yeah. But as it
turns
out,
in the end, everybody, civil court is so much better than
really
murdering some other teens who actually had nothing to do with.
And one of them is Kevin Bacon.
Yep.
He's in that movie. Yeah.
Young, for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, just not good. He gets sizzled. He gets cooked. It's pretty cool.
There is, almost every movie. That one doesn't. I don't think, but most movies have a survivor who goes on for the franchise, like Nancy and Nightmare.
That's what makes that one really cool is that the actual survivor, like she actually does survive. It's by there. Something happens where she ends up like in a small paddle boat, and either she drowned Mama Jason in the lake or something, but she ends up escaping. Mama Jason does get killed. I know that. I don't know if she kills her or not. I don't know if the girl in the boat does it, but she's in the boat at the very, very end of the movie. And the credits kind of start rolling or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like an after credit scene or whatever. And Jason, the deformed body of Jason, who drowned in the lake, spiritually is resurrected, and he jumps out of the lake and he pulls her into the lake and kills her. So the end of that movie is the rebirth of Jason as a killer.
Yeah,
so you're right. No one does survive, but she does win. She does beat the original killer. Yeah. But it's like an added bonus scene where she ends up getting killed. And then, of course, that
which seems narratively important, but man, that's what those slasher movies. And we're talking about the big hitters there.
There were so many
others. Like, I remember watching one on a sleepover at a friend's house with cable, early 80s. To this day, I'm not sure what it's called, but it was, you know, some killer stalking a co-ed campus.
You have to narrow it down.
It's exactly. It was trying to play it so broad. And the only part I really remember was, like, I think, you know, they were in the gym or, you know, it's like a small college. So obviously they've got a field. They've got a cheerleading team. You can maybe see who the victims are going to be already. And at some point, the killer, while they're out doing, like, night cheer in drills, for some reason, middle of the night, all the girls in their cheerleading stuff, trying to rehearse a routine, and he comes at them with one of those javelins.
Yeah, of course.
And you don't see the immediate aftermath, but in the next scene, like, you know, the teacher who's there or whatever comes into the training room, and there's just like six cheerleaders with these grim faces, still stuck in a cheer pose, all on a shish kebab of a javelin.
I've never seen this one. This one's great.
And I've looked for it, too. And listeners, look
if
for
you know
it.
This,
tweet it at me. But that was burned into my nine-year-old brain.
I don't remember this movie at all. But, yeah, there was a lot of those movies. And, you know, there was I remember the Hellraiser series was – because that one is so high concept, right? Like the actual formula of most of these films, you know, going back to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, was that you have $100 and let's make a movie. And, you know, so you don't really need a lot, you know, like, you know, so you didn't get a lot of effects. You didn't get a lot of costumes and a lot of makeup and stuff like that. You know, Freddy obviously changed that a little bit with all the prosthetics. But man, you watch Hellraiser, there's like four demons. They're all very distinct kind of monster looking.
Yeah, things. They invented a whole mythos just to explain why they could give everybody weird, scary makeup.
There was a guy with swords for hands. It was like a puppet thing. Like, what the hell? Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that was definitely, you could tell when it came to Hellraiser, they just picked out five or six, you know, like, this would look scary. They sketch it up, give it to a good makeup artist, prosthetics maker, and then they dress them up, say, all right, now let's find a little backstory for them and set them loose to kill.
Yeah.
And they, for then, and it was probably, you know, they live walked. So that Hellraiser could run.
That's right. Yeah. And that, you know, that's just, yeah, that's how it was back then. But
Clive had some money.
Yeah. And it was like, there was also like those weird little psycho, and like, it would like get into your brain kind of fears and where they would take like little objects and make them scary. Like there was the one with that, I don't think it was in the Hellraiser series, but it was the monkey with the,
Monkey Shines.
Monkey Shines. Wow. Yes. That thing was scary.
Yeah, to this day, the organ grinder monkey.
Well, the little doll with the symbols. Yeah.
Yeah, that you would wind up and his arms would. That was a toy, which I think culturally already it's a no go. But that movie with that on the poster.
Well, and now.
And all I know is it was some guy in a wheelchair who wished for something that went wrong. I don't even know, but. Ooh, yes, the Monkey Shines one was good. Or like in Creepshow, the guy who locks himself, Howard Hughes style, in his old penthouse, afraid of bugs and disease and then, germs.
And then he ends up becoming
a bug. Then all those cockroaches stream out. Yeah. And that, I remember, for all of us as we were kids, we would talk about that at school, the water cooler moment. And that we all lived in poverty. There was cockroaches everywhere. We'd seen plenty of them, but the ones in that movie somehow.
Yeah, it was horrifying. There was a real funny. So that one was a play on, like 1930s horror graphic novels. Mm. You know, let's kind of take this back to our friends that made the serial comic, but this one was more like you would. They were like magazines, comic books, and they would do like these little vignettes, these little scary stories, and it was called Creepshow. And like the whole premise of this movie was that you were flipping through the pages of this old magazine that these kids found like in a like an old treasure chest or something. Yep. And so they like went through these stories, and some of them were just horrifying. The one of them actually starred Stephen King. He's an author.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Stephen King. He wrote Pet Sematary.
Yes, he did. And The Shining. Yes. And so he's actually acting in this one. And he ends up, I haven't seen this in maybe 40 years, but if I remember correctly, there's like a meteorite that falls to, he's like a farmer. He's got the overalls on and he's kind of like Lenny-ish, kind of, you know, kind of brutish, you know. And he
finds, he was wearing a...
Like suspenders, you know, like those denim overalls, right?
Oh, I was going to say an Edgar suit, but
he's a farmer, right? And so he ends up finding like this meat. And again,
I, reference.
My,
I'll Google it later.
I don't get it, but to my memory, I believe it's a meteorite that falls like in his farm or whatever, like in his field, and there's like a green kind of moss that's on it, and he touches it, and then. Everything that touches it, this moss grows on him, and it just overtakes him throughout this vignette, throughout this episode, and it just grows and it grows and it grows. And there's even this scene where he has to like lick his fingers to do something, and he touches his tongue, and you're like, "No, don't touch your tongue." And it wasn't so much, you know, I think calling it Creepshow was very smart because it's not Scary Show, you know, it's Creepshow, right? It's supposed to be kind of icky and kind of gross. And
yeah, you're not describing slashers.
There's nothing crazy, scary, like someone's going to come at you in your dreams.
Actually, thinking about just these two of them, it really sounds like germaphobes gone crazy.
Yeah, it's all those things. You're right. Exactly. I remember one of them was this young couple is on like a wooden raft, you know, like with the logs are all tied together. It's flat. And then they're like floating.
That's the best way to do it.
Yeah. Yep. And they're floating in a lake. And I believe there's a topless scene in that scene. If my young memory is not fooling me here. But there's like this like green ooze that lives in the lake and it attaches to the, you know, to the kids and it kills them. So
this is
like,
also in Creepshow?
I'm pretty sure it was Creepshow. This is
just a germaphobe manifesto.
I think you're right. It's about like the furry, mossy stuff you see. It's about the cockroaches.
Anything you touch is going to be tainted.
You have to
spin around four times and say your name twice or you're...
Yeah, it's the Creepshow. I think you're absolutely right. And again, that was a play off of the old... You know, horror magazines. Well,
it's the old creepy anthology thing. Like the anthology. Twilight Zone. Yep. And of course, Tales from the Crypt.
I love Tales
based
from the Crypt.
On that.
Yeah.
Outer Limits, etc.
Amazing Stories. I think you said that. Did you say that?
I don't remember. I did. Well, now we're getting less horror.
Right.
But those are anthologies. I stand by the fact that we just mentioned a bunch of anthologies.
Let's keep it going.
Damn it. Name some anthology series.
Well, and then I think. A guy that might nudge out that fourth member on the Mount Rushmore.
Ooh, okay. I'll let you say this.
Chucky.
Ooh.
Now he came out in 88, so he was towards the end.
But nonetheless, again, it's very much 80s slasher.
It's the doll too. It's that little object that looks creepy to you.
Yep.
That if that thing could come alive, would kill you.
Yes, and that's incredibly frightening because this was a time when you were very likely to have like a Teddy Ruxpin or a My Buddy in your room anyway. So they were really, you could say that was the last effective use of like 80s scare a kid beyond just that. Yeah.
Yeah.
After that, horror movies maybe went a little stale until like Scream. In the mid-90s, when they started to get meta and recognize their own.
It put a mirror up. It showed us what the horror movies were showing us.
Let's accept these and still scare you. And then H2O. And you know what? That could be another Frankenberry show. I think it's getting time to wind this down a little bit.
Yeah, let's get
And I know here. That you promised everybody a comic book earlier.
I did.
Sorry, a graphic novel.
I did.
Can you please produce?
I can.
Can I have it?
No.
Damn.
But yeah, so the publishers were kind enough to give us a couple of copies. And heck, we'd like to give you guys a couple of copies. So,
oh, yes, we would. From the Spooky Cricket Crypt.
So we need, I want you to send me your favorite 80s horror character. Tweet it to me at StayClassySDCC.
That's all they got to do.
That's
just name one.
Yeah. Just you know, tell me about it. You know.
No. Okay. I'm gonna up the ante.
If it's Freddy, if it's Jason,
you have to give us the best. And this is where you got to like do your research and reach deep down and impress us with a reference. Your best monster fight.
Ooh.
So everybody who says Freddy versus Jason, fuck off.
Yeah.
They figured that out years ago, and it was terrible.
It was.
I want to hear Chucky versus. I don't know, the guy from a movie I haven't seen.
Fantasy type. You want to see two characters.
Give us a matchup that you wouldn't think of and really do some deep cuts. Make Marky do research when he reads his tweets.
Okay, let's do that. All right, so tweet me at StayClassySDCC and you could win one of two copies of they're going to send me three, but I'm going to keep one. So one of two copies.
Nothing if not transparent here on the show.
Nothing. Yes. But we're going to give away two copies of this exceptional graphic novel. I don't have many graphic novels. I don't have many comic books, but I have a select few and all of my comic books are better than yours. This one goes on the top shelf. It is fantastic. It's everything that I ever wanted. I can't believe that they made it. I can't believe somebody published it. and I can't believe how good it is. Jesus.
That's so that's the blurb on the back. So, I can't believe someone published this. Marquee.
So send me a tweet at StayClassySDCC. Give me your craziest 80s horror character fights. Not that actually happened, but that you want to see happen. Yeah. And tell me why.
Okay. Yeah. Throw in a couple of words. Convince me why it's a good matchup. And we will take an internal vote. And AI will decide if you're a winner or not. Yeah. Hey, listen, Marquee, before we go, and I know it's time to go.
I know, but we have a certain...
I got a little something for us.
Thank you.
I got it.
Awesome.
You know we have a partnership with many of the finest monster serial boards, agencies, mm-hmm. reviews, yep. etc. Well, this year, from Nebraska's own... ontological research for the preservation of General Mills monster cereals. Big shout out, Fighting Ontological Society. They have unearthed from the vault. Apparently, there was a time in the 80s. General Mills, you know you've heard on the show how many times they have tried to jumpstart the old monster cereals universe well before Marvel or DC or any of them. But they as we've seen, have met with the a little less success.
Yeah.
But there was a time, failing all else, they said, screw it, they're monsters, let's make 80s slasher movies with them. We'll turn into a franchise, they probably thought.
So they wanted to take serial characters based off of older movie monsters and make 80s movie monster movies about serial monsters that were based
if you want to get specific, it wasn't Monster Core, it was Slasher Core.
Okay, I didn't know.
But you got the same general idea. They wanted to make an 80s slasher movie with the monsters, and you know what? They might have got away with it, except apparently it looks like they didn't know who was a victim, who was a killer.
It sounds like it's a mess.
It's everything in the kitchen sink. Like they couldn't pull it off. It sounds like
this is totally unbelievable and cannot possibly be true.
And yet, apparently they made it. All copies, long since destroyed, okay. of course.
But you found one.
We found a copy of the trailer.
Oh, thank God, something survived.
Oh.
It lived.
And here, we are going to play it for you, because we believe in journalistic purity. So, uncut, as it was presented to us.
That sounds amazing. I do want to say, happy Frankenberry season to everybody. Happy Halloween. Happy Day of the Dead. Be safe. Be kind to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also don't steal little kids' candy bags.
No, don't do that. Nope.
Little kids,
yep.
run home fast, though, because people don't listen to us. They're ghouls.
Exactly.
All right. Take it away, Monsterpiece Theater 2023.
Meanwhile, this Halloween, something is evil at Camp Cereal Lake.
You kids ain't safe out here.
And also, don't answer the phone.
What's your favorite scary cereal?
And you better not even think about staying in a fancy abandoned hotel.
Come and play with us, Count Chocula. Forever and ever.
But most of all, don't get soggy in milk.
We all go a little soggy sometimes, haven't you?
I'm your marshmallow friend till the end!
Oh God, oh God, they're coming!
The marshmallow sweeties are here! The power of milk compels you! The power of milk compels you! The power of milk compels you. The power of milk compels you.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep at the breakfast table.
From the people who brought you this complete breakfast.
All toast is a no monster melon. Makes fruit boot a dull bone.
Comes this terrifying tale of serial mascots who I think are maybe the killers or the victims. It's hard to follow the thread.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. A Frankenstool.
I'd love to stay and chat, but I'm having an old friend for breakfast.
Thank you, everybody. Happy Halloween. Happy Frankenberry season. And big thanks to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio for that absolutely spot-on horror synth track. You guys are why we do this. Anyway, it's definitely enough of this now.
Happy Frankenberry seasons to all.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Oh, this is enough of this.